Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time. Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
So, Alex, 2 weeks in a row, WWE advertised something and did not deliver. Last week, the stipulation was someone would have to bend at the knee, and there might be a changing of the crown, and we got what should have been a DQ win for Xavier, reframed as a no contest, as some sort of cop-out for accountability. And then this week, they tease a one-on-one match, the babyface, Xavier. Roman, show you're a man. Show up without any help. And Roman appears to be coming out and taking him on in the main event, and then the Usos get beat up by Big E, and Big E comes out, and the babyface does the opposite of what he challenged the heel to man up and do. I don't quite get it. In the end, I think they made it clear what the main event is and that there's some heat between the key parties in the Raw versus SmackDown singles men's championship match. What do you think of what you saw the last 2 weeks, and I guess, you know, most of the focus on what they closed with tonight?
Well, I'm going to disagree a little bit because I don't think that they ever really promised a match between them tonight. I never took it that way. I kind of took it more as an encounter, I guess, similar to what a contract signing would be, where they kind of just stare at each other. You're right. We didn't get that either. So I guess it was a bait and switch. But I think they were trying to get over or across the fact Woods has friends too and can outsmart Reigns. So they got to the ends. I mean, I hate to give them a pass, but this might be a case of the ends justifying the means. Last week, yeah, complete cop-out. Complete cop-out. I don't understand why they make stipulations like that if they're not going to have finishes. I know why we didn't get a finish, because if you've read my report, I've been saying for 2 or 3 weeks now that I think that Reigns is going to end up battling all members of the New Day in succession on pay-per-view to get us through this really, really dry time of the year.
Yeah, no, I think it is a more than fair point. It's an accurate point, and I stand corrected, because they didn't overtly advertise it as a match. I interpret it as that, but it actually technically was advertised as a confrontation. I will stand by the idea that the babyface says, be man enough to come out alone, and then he's got Big E waiting to attack everybody. But, you know, still, you know, it is better than what last week was.
If it was Drew McIntyre and not Xavier Woods, I would agree with you more. But Xavier Woods is not portrayed as this big, tough guy who can take care of things himself, even if he acts like he is.
Oh, I think that's a good point. This just plays into how people, or I, feel about Xavier a little bit. Because if you go, hey, be man enough to come out alone, and it's all a ploy so that you can have Big E attack the Usos backstage. I mean, I understand the logic of it, which is, hey, the Usos interfered last week, so now Big E's going to take out the Usos. I mean, I get how they rationalized this as sort of not heroic, but justified, or, you know, you can rationalize it. But I just think it's a bad look. You know, just very generically, if someone says, be man enough to show up alone, and he does, and then you're the one who doesn't show up alone, I don't know. I just don't think it's a great look. But you're right. I mean, if it was Drew, it'd be awful. If it was Brock Lesnar, it wouldn't be believable. If it was the roles were switched, Reigns would be a heel for being, you know, a hypocrite and, you know, asking his opponent to do one thing and then doing the opposite himself. So I just thought it didn't make Xavier look good. But, I mean, you know, realistically, are the fans going to think about that aspect of it more than, yeah, Big E and Xavier outsmarted Reigns and the Usos and got some licks in after what happened last week? I mean, clearly that's the rationalization for what they did and the reason they did it in the first place. And the net effect is probably that, but I still have that asterisk of, I think we should just like want the people they want us to cheer to kind of live up to their word and not be just where we have to constantly be praising them for dirty tricks. It's sort of like when Sasha gave Shotzi a cheap shot after the handshake. It's like, okay, Cole's like, she showed why she's the boss and the leader of Team SmackDown. I'm like, no, that was just kind of a cheap shot. And you can sit here and go, well, Shotzi had it coming because Shotzi's Shotzi and she's got a bad attitude and she said these mean things. But it still is sort of, you know, you could say fighting fire with fire, but at some point, do you want your heroes to act like heroes or just act like they're going to just take advantage of every situation and also cheat? So sometimes that's just an issue I have with WWE. I just, not that everybody has to be goody, like super, super following the rules, Bob Backlund-esque, to use a classic example. But I just, sometimes it seems like there's a double standard that's a little hard. It's a circle that's hard to square.
Well, I mean, where all of this started, and not to go on a history lesson, but the people that started this were Steve Austin and The Rock, because that was when the babyface did kind of act like a jerk and get the upper hand after the handshake and stuff like that with the stunner or rock bottom or whatever. And unfortunately, despite everything being different now, 20 years later, they still fall back on that trope that everybody has to act like that without ever understanding that those two individuals were so unique and their characters were so unique. And let's be honest, they were just so cool that they could get away with it. The people that they have now can't, and you're right. It makes them look like jerks. You can't have somebody who you portray as a superhero. You know, I don't remember Superman or Batman ever doing something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, I do think there are rules from the Attitude Era that get applied sort of mindlessly today without enough consideration for why they were able to get away with what they did back then and why we're just kind of in a different era. I mean, this is – crowds react differently. You know, like AEW showing with Hangman Page and some of the stuff that they're doing, fans will cheer honorable people. It doesn't mean they don't love Moxley. And, you know, there's I just think there's a way to have – you know, badass baby faces doing badass things, but also have sort of a code of honor to their tactics. And WWE just doesn't seem to like be a consideration. And frankly, I mean, I know it was mega successful, but I had some issues with sometimes the way Austin and Rock acted back then. I thought there was some excessive and needless, just, you know, random violence that sometimes seemed aiming down. You know, Austin stunning women and that kind of thing. It felt like it diminished the effect of the stunner because it should just break somebody in half like that. But I also just thought sometimes it felt like they were going for a pop more than caring about the character of the wrestlers. But, you know, I mean, it worked, but I think it would have worked and maybe a little better if they would have picked their spots a little more strategically. And I would apply that even more so given the point you made, Alex, there. But overall, I mean, do they, you know, is Big E standing in the ring going, I can't wait till Sunday, and Reigns just looking at him and being angry and going, I'm the tribal chief. And, you know, yes, that's what, that should be the closing scene of the last TV show 48 hours before Survivor Series when they wrestle. And, you know, you had to have Big E show up. All of this with Xavier was just booking backwards for, you know, setting up not only the angle tonight, but maybe something that happens at Survivor Series involving these outside parties too. How does what they did last week and this week set up in some way or perhaps portend what will be the finish on Sunday? Can you extrapolate from their actions any clues?
Well, if we go by the basic trope that whoever gets the upper hand on the go-home show loses, then that tells you all you need to know. But, I mean, I don't think that there's any way at all that Reigns loses. I don't think you could do it. I listened to you and Jason Powell this morning, and he made a solid case, but I still can't get behind it. I really, really, really think that Reigns' loss needs to be to somebody up and coming that's going to take the title and be their next big guy. I have an idea of who I would use. I don't think it's who they're going to use, but I really think you need to save it for that. I like Big E, but I don't think that he's that guy. And because of the whole Survivor Series brand versus brand stipulation, I don't think it really has the impact that you would want it to anyway. So it would be kind of a waste of time to have Reigns lose here, even if it's nefarious.
Yes, I mean, ultimately, I agree. I mean, I think Big E, it's great they're going to push, and I think they should make him look respectable, but he's not the right guy to end Reigns' run of being undefeated since his return. If The Rock were to come back, they talked about The Rock 25th anniversary of his Survivor Series debut. I'm sort of assuming he shows up on a video or something. But if he did get involved in the finish and Rock cost Reigns in some way this match, I guess that might justify having Reigns lose, but it would be to propel Reigns into demanding that Rock show up and wrestle him. Ticket sales for the double WrestleManias aren't great, so maybe, they're trying to figure something out to get that kicked up a notch. What do you think of that?
Well, I hate to answer your question with a question, but I'm going to do it anyway. Don't you think if The Rock did show up and cost Reigns and Big E wins that way, with that added to how he won the title in the first place, don't you think it hurts him more than it helps him? That's what the other reason I wouldn't do it.
What do you mean it hurts him more than it helps him? Oh, you mean Big E?
If Big E can only beat Reigns because The Rock helped him, and he only won the title because of Money in the Bank and Lashley was hurt, if you put all those things together, I just don't think it bodes well for Big E and the rest of this push.
So what I'd say to that is I don't think Rock showing up to cost Reigns the match would be – I wouldn't say that that's a way to help Big E get over more. So you're setting up the answer is yes, that won't help Big E get over more. But that's not why I would in any way present that as a possible option worthy of endorsing. I'm thinking, how do you get out of this match without Big E losing clean? If it's just a wash coming out of Survivor Series with this unnecessary Raw champ versus SmackDown thing where, like we saw last year, can define someone down a little bit, it certainly shows Vince's hand clearly and definitively when Reigns beats Drew that we know who he believes in more. And on a meta level and a psychological level with the fan base, that sort of lingers and sticks around, and it helps Reigns and it hurts Drew. I'm sort of just looking for a way to steer clear of that obstacle in the middle of the road when it comes to Big E being defined down. So you're right. I don't think it would help if Rock interfered and helped Big E win. I don't think that's a way to give Big E a boost. It's just a way to avoid the big pothole.
I tend to agree, but at the same time, I think – I don't know. See, I'm not of the belief that McIntyre's loss last year is what killed him. I think it was the booking after that and the mess with The Miz and all that kind of stuff and what they did after that. I think that was more of a factor than the match at Survivor Series. So we have a different set of opinions there.
You know what? Well, I'll create another nuancing here. I agree it didn't kill Drew or do great. It didn't there's more damage was done to Drew later. And frankly, other people just rose up, Lashley just had a good stretch. But I do think it weakened him and it made him more vulnerable. I think that, having some sort of better finish for Drew, who at that point, the perception was there might even be some debate, of who Vince would be more behind. And that finish didn't inoculate Drew from the perception that he was a clear distant number two to Reigns. And I think it did establish that no matter how they framed it and talked about it, I think it set in motion the idea Drew's not Vince's guy. Drew is underneath. He's the second guy, not tied for first because they didn't protect him enough. But I'm not arguing it killed Drew, but I do think he was less protected from then some things that didn't go well later. So it's kind of a middle zone in terms of, I think it hurt him, but you're right. It made him vulnerable to things that were more substantial that hurt him more.
To avoid it this time, the biggest thing is that I don't know if Big E getting choked out. That was the finish last year, right? Was Drew got choked out?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think you do that again. But maybe one of those pin situations, like a Hogan Warrior, where Big E kicks out right after, you know what I mean? Something like that. Maybe you do something like that. Or maybe even something. I wish I could suggest a roll up. But I can't because they overuse it so much.
Yeah.
But if the roll up was better protected, they could also do, and again, the size thing doesn't apply, but, the Diesel Brett, where Brett kind of caught him and Diesel was a little protected that way. But again, the roll-up is used so much now, it just doesn't have the same impact, so I don't think it would work.
Yeah. And, I mean, I think they were trying to protect Drew last year when, you know, Jey Uso ran out and then Drew had to knock him off the ring apron and had his back turned a little bit, and then Jey gave Drew a super kick. I mean, I think they felt like that was protecting Drew, that there was interference, but they don't let the baby faces, like, remind people of that and go, you know, it just – so in the end, it's you can do a roll up, you can do any, you know, can have a distraction lead to an excuse for the babyface wouldn't have lost if it wasn't clean. You know, Michael Cole at the end of SmackDown said, you know, did say if it wasn't for Jey Uso, who the hell knows what would have happened. They were trying to do that, but it still sends that message. I think it's more clear cut this year. You know, people don't perceive Big E, even though Big E and Drew are similar in age. I think people just see Big E as having a lower ceiling than Drew in terms of being a centerpiece star. Not sure they're right. Frankly, I mean, I'd still, well, what would you, I would probably put my money, if I had to pick one of two guys to headline pay-per-views and my TV show for the next 18 months, and the other guy has to be cut from the roster. Do you go with Drew or Big E right now, Alex?
Well, I have to cut the other guy?
Yeah, yeah, like, well, just, yeah.
If I have time to rebuild him and I can rebuild him properly, I go with Drew hands down.
And I do too. You know, but I mean, I think some people might disagree. I mean, I'm kind of pausing as I think about it just because I think people are kind of cold on Drew, and I think people think it's exciting seeing Big E do what he's doing. But Big E just is less proven in terms of big time singles main event matches. And I think Drew can have high quality WWE style main event singles matches that leave fans satisfied. With Big E, I just got to see more. You know, the track record is him being excellent in tag matches and doing some, you know, more upper mid-card singles matches here and there. So I'd want to see more from him. Nevertheless, it gives us something to talk about. I think WWE does book themselves into a situation where compromises are made, and I think it lingers. You know, no matter how Big E loses, if he loses on Sunday, you're affirming what people were kind of thinking, and maybe that means less damage than establishing something that wasn't as concluded. If we go back a year ago, going into Drew Reigns, you know, people can listen back to what we're saying a year ago tonight about that and the conundrum in our archives if they want. But, you know, I think it was less of a given that Reigns would win. And they try to protect Drew. They'll try to protect Big E again. But, you know, we could end up with just a big schmoz with you know, the Usos and Big E's friends, you know, leading to some sort of chaos. But in the end, I just don't think they're going to end Reigns' streak unless, if I dare say streak, if they're not going to have Reigns lose on a big stage to Big E at this point. I'm with you going full circle back to this isn't the time and he's not the person, unless Rock is around and it's a big angle to set up a, you know, a real big match. You said you had someone in mind who you would have Reigns lose to first. Who is that?
Hmm. All right. I'm going to preface this by saying there would need to be a little bit of a character change first. And I don't want to open Pandora's box and tell you how I would do it, but the guy I would go with is Matt Riddle.
I figured you were going there. Especially when you said we'd have to tweak his character. I don't think you're alone on that. You know, Riddle's around the age of Drew and Big E. You know, it's like, you don't want to wait 5 years to decide to make your money.
100% yes.
Yep. Yeah, I think fans like him. I think Randy Orton endorsing him has helped. You know, yes, he's been dopey, but he's also been likable. I don't think Vince has that. And I know Vince thinks people forget everything. Like, because if he doesn't remember or he doesn't really spend time thinking about the past, which, you know, everyone says he's just looking forward all the time, then he might not think it matters. But I think it sticks with people that he booked Omos to just manhandle Riddle and just toss him around like he was, you know, might as well Drake Maverick. You know, like, it's just like just a guy just being discarded to build this monster, this monster giant guy. I think that hurts Riddle's brand a bit. I think that sticks with people, even if they don't think exactly why. It sends a message that gets implanted in people's brains that Riddle's a fun novelty mid-card act. He's buddies with Orton, but we don't take him seriously. It would take some rebuilding to undo that. Now, Toni Storm, you know, got plowed through in the tournament or whatever it was, and now she's stepping up to face Charlotte. Vince doesn't think people remember or care, or if both are true, he thinks they'll still watch because they'll just he'll run a good angle and a good promo and people watch anyway. So maybe that same principle would ultimately apply to Riddle. So yeah, interesting. I wanted to remember to ask you that, and I did. Go ahead.
Just real quick. The other thing I want to throw in is when I say Riddle, I'm talking about WrestleMania 39. Like, he goes through a year of changing character. He wins the Rumble, and then WrestleMania 39, not anytime soon. Also, the person that I think they're going to use to beat Reigns is Braun Breaker.
Yeah. I think as of right now, November 19th, 2021, he is the best bet money-wise. But I am not confident that will still be the case in 3 months because Vince McMahon is fickle and we've seen so little of Braun. Braun might be the exciting new flavor and he's impressive so far. And there's the cachet with the Steiner name. And is he just a better version of Rick and Scott when it comes to singles upside? Maybe the answer is yes to all that, but it's a small track record. So I think you're right that's the thought as of now and a good bet. But it's not as sure of a thing as some other, quote, sure things in the past. But I'm for it if it happens, if he stays on the course he's on.
I have yet to see the guy work. So when I do, I will let you know.
There you go. Well, I will not consider that a you're acknowledging what you think reality is more than endorsing it as the right move.
1,000%.
Yeah. All right, well, let's pause, introduce ourselves, and then get rolling to the phone calls. We also have an on-site correspondent from Hartford who we are expecting to hear from. Javier is calling in, so we'll have a roundtable session with him in a bit, too. But first things first, I'm Wade Keller, the host of this, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, November 19th, 2021. By the way, thanks to Zach Haydorn for sitting in the host chair last week, both last Friday and Monday. I was at Rampage, AEW Rampage in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Target Center last Friday, so I wasn't able to cover SmackDown, a rare occasion where I'm not typing up my report live. The other voice you hear is a person who covered SmackDown last Friday on PWTorch.com all alone without my report next to his, Alex McDonald. How you doing, Alex?
Good. Thank you, Wade.
Good to have you. We're going to continue talking SmackDown tonight, and that means you are also invited to be part of the conversation. Our phone number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. Just a reminder, if you're downloading our show on your phone app or streaming us on your computer over the weekend, thank you. That's great. Please do that. But also consider yourself invited to listen to our live stream and call in after SmackDown ends. We're on the air about 5 minutes or so after SmackDown, also Raw and Dynamite, on Mondays and Wednesdays when those shows go off the air. We go live at WadeKellerPostShow.com. That's WadeKellerPostShow.com. We have a direct link to the live stream also on Twitter at PWTorch and on our website, PWTorch.com, in my TV reports. So lots of ways to find us and live stream the show. And then you can hear us as we are reviewing the show live and also join in the conversation. When you call, push 1 on your keypad after calling in. That flags you on our switchboard so we know that you want to be brought on the show. Another way for you to participate is via email. And the email address is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, let's go to phone calls and continue talking about this show. There's quite a bit more for us to get to that we haven't yet. And we'll begin with Nick in Brattleboro. We won't make him wait this week. Nick, you are up first in the leadoff position. We will ask you to bunt or hit a single probably. How are you doing?
Okay, I'm going to Rod Carew myself and slap a single to left.
nice
how's
reference.
That for a twin? How's that for a Twins reference?
Yes, I thought it was one of my earliest sporting memories of seeing him at bat at the old Metropolitan Stadium. So.
Oh, man, was amazing. What he could do with a baseball bat was unbelievable. First of all, I just want to say I hope Pixie's doing well. I've read your tweet. She seems to be eating, hopefully, knock on wood.
I am petting her right now. She's about 3 feet away from me, curled up on the chair next to my desk, and she is very comfortable and recovering from what a week ago was a rough weekend. And for those who haven't followed along, she had emergency surgery. She had a intestinal blockage and has been going through recovery. She's got a tube up her nose, which she is not thrilled about, so we can feed her because she stopped eating last Friday, and we had to get a tube in there after 5 days to get her some nutrients. But she's regaining her weight, and hopefully the tube comes out Sunday or Monday. And, she's starting to eat her food. But, I'll feel better when that tube's out and she's just back to her regular diet. But she is otherwise her regular self, just hanging out, cuddling, and laying by the fireplace. Well, so thanks
for
her.
That's great. Although I do have to question your naming her Pixie, although I'm assuming it's probably one of your kids who did that.
Oh, Pixie's a perfect name for her, but it actually was her name in the litter. She was pre-named, but she's still a Pixie.
Yeah.
But it was my son who decided to stick with it.
Anyway, I'm happy for you and your family and for her and her sister. So,
yes.
On to the show. And I heard you guys talking about The Rock and such, and they kind of like, I mean, you know, okay, hit me in the head with a frying pan. You know, do you think he's really going to show, or are they going to, double switch us, or?
Well,
or what?
Jimmy Fallon brought it up to Roman Reigns on the Tonight Show a couple days back, and that's when it kind of got like, whoa, that probably isn't something Jimmy would go into business for himself on and go, there's rumors Rock's going to be there. However, if it's just to acknowledge 25 years since his debut and it's a little video message, that's the least, that we could see. But if it's like in person, maybe that is planting some seeds and maybe we're not going to wait until a WrestleMania in LA. You know, I don't think the city should matter that much. I don't know. I don't want to know, just surprise.
Yeah.
Me. I mean,
yeah.
Whatever it is, 25 years and, they kind of wedged it into the show and it and planted the seed, and I'm cool with that.
I did check his Twitter feed, and I didn't see anything that he's hanging out in New York, so we'll see what that means.
Yeah.
It was a weird show this week. I mean, it was so many quick, flash-in-the-pan matches, and I don't understand why they just had Charlotte in a backstage segment unless she's picking up a lot of backstage heat. I would have thought they would have wanted to have her come out and answer Becky. They did the video recap, but I would have thought they would have wanted to have her out front this week. And poor Toni Storm, just like, oh, okay, you're in the match, and we'll give you 30 seconds backstage. That poor woman.
I didn't expect poor Toni Storm from anybody tonight. I thought this was a really good week for her. She's getting to talk about Charlotte, and she's gone from not being on TV or jobbing out to suddenly sharing the screen with Charlotte as her post-Survivor Series opponent. I think there's a lot of recently unemployed women and a roster full of people on NXT and others in the roster who, everybody would want to be in her spot right now. Getting a program with Charlotte, and she got to sort of, be treated as her equal. I don't think you want your top stars on every show talking, yammering on and on about the same thing. Or, I think sometimes less is more. I thought Charlotte got the showcase last Friday. This week she got a brief promo. But I want to throw to Alex, do you think the Becky Charlotte match is a big selling point? And if WWE was actually in the business of selling you on spending $50 or more dollars for a pay-per-view, as opposed to sort of the inertia and continuation of the Peacock setup, that they would have pushed Charlotte Becky more than just that video package highlighting the War of Words and almost looking past it with the Toni Storm promo. Would they have done something more substantial? And should they have anyway?
Yeah, it is a selling point, just to get that out of the way. It's a huge selling point. It's probably the thing on this pay-per-view I'm the most excited about, honestly. With that said, I think that what ended up happening here is Charlotte cut her big statement promo last Friday, and then Becky did hers on Monday. And I don't think they wanted to go back to Charlotte and kind of give her, what's the word I'm looking for, a one-upsmanship, I guess, of having her be able to go twice to Becky's once. And the video package tonight was excellent. There's a lot of things that we knock WWE for. One of the things that all of us can agree they deserve praise for is their video packages, and tonight was no exception. It was fantastic, and I think they handled it very well. So I think that's why you didn't get more out of Charlotte tonight, simply because of the fact that I don't think they wanted to give her the last word. I think they wanted to keep them even, which I think both of their promos were, for the most part. I think they both came off strong. I also don't think you can risk a situation where Charlotte doesn't have a promo that was as impactful as last week and she comes out a little flat. Obviously, they have more faith in her than that, and I would too, but you can't risk it. It's kind of like taking a knee at the end of a football game. I think that's kind of better off in this situation.
Yeah, Nick, your thoughts on everything we just said?
Yeah, no, I guess I see what you're saying about Toni Storm, and I think I agree with that. And yeah, I mean, you could do the rebuttal with Charlotte, but you're right. I mean, if she puts her foot in it, then it potentially kills some momentum. And yes, of course, WWE has always been known for their packages. I think, you know, I agree with you there. Two things, and then I'll let you talk about it, and I'll get off and let other people have a shot. And you guys may have missed it since you're doing your reports, but they started what seemed like a tribute to Bruno Sammartino, and it turned into a T-shirt ad that you can only buy at the event. I was like, oh, my God, the Italians in New York are going crazy right now. I lived in New York when he was big, and it was he was Bruno Sammartino. I mean, you know, and I just said, oh, my God, they're just selling everything out. And then along a similar line, I love Shinsuke. Boogs, I can, you know, whatever. But I feel so bad for the Intercontinental title. I mean, I remember Tito Santana and how he worked that Intercontinental title, and it was something special for him. And I hate kind of seeing that it's just kind of become this nothing title, and it's just upsetting. And with that, I will leave you guys to your weekend, and hopefully Survivor Series is a good show. And that's it. Have a great weekend.
Cool. Thanks. I appreciate it. Alex, anything you want to say to what Nick brought up there at the end?
Well, I think I've said every week in my report now for the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks that I don't remember the last time Nakamura defended the Intercontinental title. So, Javier, since you will be on later and you're very good at looking these things up while we're sitting here talking, if you could please do that for us and let me know if he even has defended the title successfully since he won it, because other than the rematch with Apollo, I don't remember it at all. So I agree with Nick completely. The Intercontinental title used to mean something. The two guys that feuded over the Intercontinental title usually later on would have another feud for the world title. There's quite a few that you can throw into that mix, whether you're talking about Rock and Austin or Rock and Triple H or, you know, Shawn, Brett. There's so many guys that have held that title that later on became world champions, and you knew when they had the Intercontinental title that it was just a matter of time before they got the big push.
I on our discussion here about Rock and Reigns and WrestleMania and all that, just wanted to note they sold about 75,000 tickets to WrestleMania, which sounds fantastic, although it's averages about, you know, 37.5 for each of the first two nights. And oftentimes WrestleMania just sells out. So we'll see how this dual WrestleMania night thing goes. Rock is certainly someone who would accelerate ticket sales quickly if there's a big angle on Sunday. I think they did tease Lesnar is going to be at Staples Center on December 11th, sitting front row, even though he's suspended. It's kind of, you know, don't tune out in December if you're a WWE fan thinking nothing will happen until after New Year's. That's kind of a weird thing. So I don't know how that can factor in, but I just throw that out there as we try to figure out what they might do at Survivor Series to drop some hints about where they're going to go with the start of Royal Rumble and WrestleMania season, you know, just a month and a half later. All right, we do have our correspondent from Hartford, Connecticut, who attended SmackDown tonight, ready to come on. Paul, welcome. Thanks for joining us after attending SmackDown tonight.
My pleasure. Good to talk to you, Wade.
Excellent. Are you on Bluetooth or speaker? And if not, can you safely talk right into the phone? You sound okay, but not great.
Yeah. Give me just a sec. Can you put that on regular? Sorry about that.
No, no problem.
All right. Is that better?
Oh, yeah, way better. You almost sound like you're in a radio studio relative to the way you sounded a few seconds ago. So that's good. So yeah. What was the attendance like tonight? We'll start with that. How full, how many, if they didn't block any seats, how much of the building would have been full?
Yeah. So it was pretty packed, and more packed than I've seen a wrestling show, in some time. I would say about 90%, the stadium holds about 15,000. The only empty spot was the upper deck behind the hard camera. So good crowd.
Yeah, not bad at all. Not bad at all. So what stood out to you on the show that you will remember most a year or two from now if you look back at the show?
Well, I think I'll remember that it was about an hour and a half before I saw a wrestling match that was as long as Roman Reigns' entrance. So that was a bit of a disappointment. A long wait for wrestling on a wrestling show.
That's funny. I mean, it's probably not what you want people saying about your show afterwards. But when you're watching on TV, I think we sort of just, not everybody, because some people just are waiting around for wrestling, and I get that. But it is, we're sort of ingrained to see this as it's a TV show, and sometimes there's wrestling, and sometimes it takes a while to get there. In this case, there wasn't a ton of wrestling on, you know, I mean, for a while. So, So, let's pick the number two memory you'll have.
I think it was a lot of fun seeing Roman and seeing the Usos and their whole act. The crowd was just wild for them, both cheering and booing.
Cool. Alex, jump in with a question.
So what was the crowd like? Do you have a lot of families, or was it more hardcore fans, males? You know, what kind of crowd was it?
Yeah, definitely a lot of families. You know, I didn't see so many hardcore fans. You know, I saw tons and tons of Roman Reigns gear. That was definitely the T-shirt of the night. And not so much, you know. I think I saw one AEW shirt. Not a lot of really real hardcore fans that I could see.
Go ahead, Alex. Yep.
I assume that means Reigns got the biggest pop of the night, then.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, I think so. Cheers and boos. Although Big E and Drew got a nice respectable pop as well.
Jeff Hardy tends to get mentioned by our inside correspondents as getting a bigger pop than they expected, kind of that legacy star pop. How was it tonight in Hartford?
Yeah, I didn't hear such a big big reaction for Jeff this time around. This is the first time I noticed they changed his music from the Hardy Boys music. I was a little surprised, but maybe I haven't been paying as much attention.
Yeah, I don't know. I miss Sami Zayn's music. I think the music he comes out to now could be the music the ring announcer comes out to before the taping, the show starts. It's as generic as it gets. It's like they're trying to bury him. I miss my dose of Sami's entrance music to perk me up, and he's so much less animated. That's a big drop off. But yeah, Jeff Hardy, you know, it's his song, you know, so I think he's happy with it. But what was the biggest lull in the show where not just you, but maybe the crowd lost interest? Was it, you know, I mean, some of the matches are so short, they didn't have time to get bored.
Yeah, there was some real, I was just kind of some throw your hands up moments, you know, the women's tag match that ended before it started, the Nakamura match that ended before it started. And, you know, and just sort of us sitting on our hands during commercials and the Charlotte Becky package, which I got to say, might have been the disappointment of the show not seeing either one of those women.
You're getting a little muffled on us. I'm not sure if you adjusted how you're talking into the phone, but we can make
Sorry
out what you're
that.
Saying. Oh, yeah, there you go. That's a lot better again. Yeah, Charlotte and not appearing in front of the crowd even before after the show, like – well, let me ask this, because this is part of putting this in context. Did they do anything after the show ended as a dark match, a way to send you home without just an angle?
Yes, they did. Thank goodness we got another wrestling match besides just Sasha and Shotzi. We got Roman and the Usos against Drew and Xavier and Big E. So essentially, everybody was in place except Drew came out and the match started. It flowed very nice.
How long did that go and what was the finish?
It went a good, 15 minutes or so, you think? It was a nice match. Segment where Xavier was beat down, and they certainly milked that for all it was worth. And there was a very memorable moment. I think the crowd was chanting ECW, and Heyman took off his jacket. It looked like he was getting ready to fight. Then he said, "I put the Jew in jiu-jitsu. ECW is dead, and I wish the same for every single one of you," which was maybe the line of the night.
Wow. what was the finish of the match?
So the finish saw Big E give the big ending to Uso number, I'm not sure, and disposing of Roman. I think Roman took the big ending and rolled out of the ring, and then the Uso came in and took the pin.
Well, Roman and Big E were battling, both in the angle and in the dark match afterwards. Did it seem like the crowd was like 60-40 one way or the other, 90-10? Fans are cheering for both. Like, what was the breakdown? What should we expect Sunday if the crowd is similar?
I think that most of the crowd was cheering for Big E. Would you agree? Yeah, clearly. I mean, although, even though, you know, there was a ton of Roman fans, everybody likes Big E.
Yeah. Well, that's good for Big E, because generally a really popular heel will still get booed against an equally popular babyface, but a really popular heel will get cheered against the babyface who the fan base isn't all that behind. And in this case, it's good for Big E. You know, fans are buying him in this spot and they like him. I mean, who wouldn't like Big E? He's a, you know, you might not like that he doesn't take himself as seriously as you'd like some of the time. That, I think, in the recent weeks has been corrected to a good degree. But it's not like, who could not like him? You know what I mean? It's like he's not a turnoff like Cena and Reigns, for instance, or Cody is experiencing in AEW. I don't think anybody feels that
absolutely
way towards him. So,
nobody. Nobody was dead. Big E in the back.
Yeah. How about Sasha Banks and her reaction? I feel like it's just a constant guessing game, and you never know month to month if she's going to be framed as a face or a heel, and sometimes it's clear, sometimes it's not, and there's almost never a turn. But people see her as a star. So along those same lines, here she is against Shotzi, who I think has been a good heel so far, just in terms of being really annoying. I think, you know, like I would say about Hook in AEW, you just want to see someone punch him in the face. I've thought I just, you know, want to see, you know, any of the women in WWE, you know, punch her in the face. Even when she was a baby face, you know, that whole, her reaction to the tank was just like, ah, just someone stop her. So I assume she's a good opponent for Sasha, but talk about the crowd reaction there.
Yeah, so the crowd definitely loves Sasha. She doesn't have that sort of magnetic teeth that Becky has, I think. But, I mean, she's so good in the ring. People want to cheer, but, yeah, she just doesn't quite have the ability to manipulate a crowd as some do.
You're getting a little muffled again, by the way. But, again,
sorry.
We're able to hear you. That's okay. I know it's tough sometimes, especially if you're in a car. Alex, you want to jump in with another follow-up or additional topic?
Was there anything before the show? I know you mentioned there was a dark match after, but did you guys have anything before?
Yes, we were. We got to see Sami Zayn and Drew Gulak against the Viking Raiders. Sami first refused to wrestle, saying he didn't know that he was going to have to wrestle the Vikings, and if he had, he would have picked a better partner. But of course, the match ended up happening anyway. And of course, Sammy's just such a master at getting the crowd excited, you know, getting the crowd heat going, which he did. So the match ended when it looked like the Vikings got the upper hand. Drew went to tag Sammy, who decided he really would prefer not to continue with the match. He left, and the Viking Raiders got the pin on Gulak.
What kind of reaction did Sheamus get in his return after being off SmackDown since the draft, obviously?
Yeah, I thought Sheamus got a real positive reaction, maybe more positive than they might have been going for.
Yeah.
People were all in all happy to see him. Would you say that? Yeah. It seemed like he wasn't getting so much of a heel reaction. Even when he won by cheating, the crowd seemed like they appreciated him.
Did the crowd know who Ridge Holland was when he came out?
Hard to tell. He didn't get too much of a reaction either way. I couldn't tell if people knew it. It didn't. Certainly, they didn't. There wasn't much tell. So not much of a reaction.
I am not surprised Sheamus was getting cheered. That's why I asked that. I think he's had a good year, and I think he hasn't been, you know, memorably despicable. And he's kind of badass, and he's one of the, you know, long-term, he's weird, it's weird, but he's like one of the longest tenured guys right now in kind of the main event scene, you know, the semi-main event scene. So I'm curious where he ends up over the next 6 months, and if Holland is, you know, the vehicle to turn Sheamus officially babyface, if Holland looks up to him, but eventually, you know, turns on him. I'm intrigued by that, and if they can turn Holland into a star in this process, you know, that's good too, because he certainly fits what they look for in a lot of ways. Is there anything else you want to add, Paul, to your experience tonight? Any interesting chants or off-camera things or the ring announcer bantering or any other observations that we wouldn't pick up from TV?
Yeah, I don't know. They're doing less in terms of terrible, like, promotional, WWE promotional videos. They're doing less of the awful commercials, you know, in the downtime, and they're doing more of these like crowd interaction segments. Like they did a beard cam where they show the different audience members with beards. They had a Naomi dance contest, these are ways to kind of get the crowd into what's going on. And it's a great improvement over, you know, the stuff they used to show us. So that was a real positive.
Cool. Paul, thanks so much for checking in with us and let us know how the show was in person.
Hey, it's been a pleasure. Great talking to you guys.
Great. Thanks, Paul. Let us know next time you go to a show.
Will do. Take care.
Yep, you too. All right. We'll jump now to Jay, who is also in Hartford. Jay, did you attend tonight? Oh, Jay, you're breaking up on us.
Okay, hold on a second.
Sure.
All right, wait.
How's it going, Jay? Good to talk to you.
Good. Yes, I did attend the show. You can hear me okay?
Okay would might be overstating it. I mean, I know you're there. I know you're talking to us. It doesn't sound great.
I'm using the parking garage. That's probably why. I'll be out in a moment. So I don't know if you want to. I'm almost out. I don't want to hold up the show.
If you're almost out, we can wait. If it's like 30 seconds or less. Otherwise, we can put you on hold and take another call and come back to you. What would you rather us do?
It is. Do that, because I'm pulling up to a closed door and I got to figure out how to get out of it now. So yeah.
No problem.
Thanks, Wade.
Good teaser. No problem, Jay. Well, after the commercial break, we'll play your music as if it never stopped. All right. We'll go to Mike in Atlantic City next. Mike, thanks for calling up. Thanks for holding. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Well, the show really didn't get going for me until an hour. The Sasha match and then the last segment with Roman Reigns. The Sasha-Shelty match I really enjoyed. I think the finish with the bank statement with the leg, that was unique looking. I like that. I know she used that version of the bank statement at the Elimination Chamber that one year because her hand was hurt. Was her hand really hurt tonight, Wade? Is that why she used that version of the bank statement?
You know what? I didn't replay her fall to ringside. I am assuming it was just her selling, but maybe she did re-hurt her hand. It didn't even cross. I just assumed it was selling. Alex, what do you think?
No, I think that was part of the match. If you looked at the structure of the match and the story that they told, which was really well done, I think all of that was the plan. The only thing that I think went awry was Shotzi falling through the ropes there. If you notice, they went back to that spot where back to the Meteora so they could go to break. I think that's because they screwed it up first time with whatever was supposed to happen with her going through.
Yep. By the way, Alex, so I don't forget to ask, what do you think of Shotzi's work so far, both her backstage promo last week, what she did this week, in terms of her personality, but also her ring work? Just, you sold on her, and she's a good choice for this pick, and she's doing to get a push as a heel, or is she showing that she might not be ready yet?
I think she's a great choice. I mean, they have to start making stars. They absolutely have to. And I'm not going to knock them for trying it with somebody until I see that person fail, because I want to see them try new things. I think it's too often that we immediately criticize what they try and then complain when they don't do new things and we see the same stuff all the time. So I like to give things a chance as much as I can. With that said, I think the way she's coming off, and this is not a bad thing, is she's like a football team that's good but not great. They hang in there with the really good teams and almost beat them, but then they lose in overtime on a field goal or something like that. And then, they get a player or two or whatever, a year older, and then a year or two down the line, they end up beating that team and end up winning a championship or whatever. I feel like that's where she's at right now. She had really good matches with Charlotte and Sasha and just came up a little bit short. They're bigger stars. They're a little bit better than her. So if you look at it from a sports aspect, you see that she's kind of on the right path, but not quite there yet. As far as from the meta perspective of outside of kayfabe world, I think she's a good choice. I thought that match tonight was great. Whoever booked that and came up with the structure and the spots did a really good job. I think her offense is good. I liked the sliced bread. That was cool. I like that modified TKO she does. That's cool too. I think it's good. The screaming in the ring, it's good stuff. I mean, I want to see more. And I hope she doesn't just lose every feud she's in ever. But I am intrigued. I want to see more.
Very good. Anything else, Mike, on that, or do you want to talk about something else?
To follow up on Shelty. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I think her her work is really good. And, some people, they're not like a really big fan of her. And then, some people are, but I've always enjoyed her in ring work. I thought it's always, been really good. I never really saw her as a babyface going anywhere in the company. So I think this heel move was the right choice. I just hope, when she moves on from Sasha, I just hope they can, you know, build her back up. You know, that's what I miss about the old school ways, is you would build somebody back up by bringing in, like I mentioned before, you know, squash matches. Like, the right thing to do would be, you know, after Shelty loses to Sasha again, or whenever this feud is over, is have Shelty beat the hell out of the jobber, bring in a female jobber, you know, and then just have Shelty squash her and do that like 3 weeks in a row and just build her back up as this aggressive, possessed heel, and then just give her bigger opponents as time goes on. And that's how you would build her back up. You know, just don't let her get lost in the shuffle. And that's what I'm worried is going to happen. Like, come January, February, she's just going to be another female on the roster doing 2-3 minute matches that mean nothing. But I hope, you know, she gets a good push and she succeeds as a heel and gets some big feuds. What are you guys' thoughts on that?
Yeah, Alex, the rotation of talent, if they're not top stars, is a challenge. You know, we saw with AEW coming out of Full Gear, MJF moved up to Punk, Darby Allin moved down to Billy Gunn. There's a sense of consequence to wins and losses, but when Darby loses to MJF and then takes on Billy Gunn, it's to build him back up again and keep him relevant by giving him somebody he can beat who fans want to see him beat. And the key for WWE with creating new stars is to make sure that they don't just seem like the shiny new toy, the flavor of the month, and then they just get forgotten about, and people who invested in them feel like, well, why did I invest in them now? They're not even doing any kind of follow-up. And, you know, I think Vince likes to think about what is important to him right now, and then once it's not important to him, it's like it's a binary on-off switch, as opposed to what can we do to keep this talent on people's minds and relevant to be used in a different way that still is important. Your thoughts on Mike's scenario there?
Well, I agree with the jobber thing, and the biggest reason I agree with that is because, more so in the women's division, but it's kind of true in the men's divisions too, is you kind of have the upper echelon of your Bianca's, Sasha's, Charlotte, Becky, Bailey when she's around. And then you have that next tier of the Carmellas and Shotties and things like that. But I don't know if there's a true floor, because they rotate those women into championship matches so often. So there's not really that bottom floor of like the on-site correspondent brought up Drew Gulak. Can anybody name a female equivalent of Drew Gulak? Actually, I understand that they're, I mean, maybe you feel Zelina is or something like that, but
I guess I'll volunteer Dana Brooke, but
okay. So you have one on two shows.
Right. Yep.
Okay. So I'll give you that one, but that's kind of what my point is there's not that bottom tier to truly mix and match to where like Shotty could go down to that person and beat them, and then go up to, I don't know, say Natalya or Naomi, and then from there go to Toni Storm, and then from there back to Sasha. That series of levels does not exist, and because it does not exist, that's why the jobbers are necessary right now. The roster is so thin that they can't do that anymore. And I don't understand why, if they were going to fire some of these women, like they just fired Tegan Knox, why didn't they just use her as a jobber for 2 weeks if they were just going to fire her anyway, and at least give the people some convincing wins over her if they're just going to let her go? But they don't do that because they don't think ahead. Everything they do is very overcorrective or reactionary, and that's where we end up in this situation where you're absolutely right, Mike. That's the way to get Shotzi over or to build her back up. But how do you do that without completely destroying the rest of that division because there aren't those set tiers?
Mike, what do you say?
Yeah, I mean, like, you could have her face somebody like Toni Storm maybe, but yeah, would you want to defeat her? You know, so I mean, Tegan Knox would have been somebody good, yeah, I just can't think of a lot of names out there.
Yeah, I mean, the roster, I think Alex brings up a good point, which is WWE does all these, you know, quote, budget cuts as opposed to creative has nothing for you cuts. And it
right.
just is such a drop in the bucket budget-wise to have some experienced names who can just be out there to occupy, either put over and be a good hand and take some bumps and just, you know, it's okay to have some matches on Raw or SmackDown that aren't just directly involving the people who are feuding with each other going into a pay-per-view. And you want to have some, you know, and they're so worried about people tuning out of the show, and I think they're way more insecure about that than they ought to be. And having Tegan Knox around and some of these men and women that they've cut just to be utility workers to help maintain relevance for people when they move out of the top spot is an underrated asset on a roster to have that I bet has never even crossed Nick Khan's mind as a thing. You know, and Vince McMahon just going along with you know, Lauren, Vince wants budget cuts. Everybody just, whatever, we're going to be a lean machine and only have people on payroll who we really need right now. And man, if you're in WWE and you're not essential, you are making sure you don't put your hand in the M&Ms or peanuts. You pour them into your hand because it's you cover your mouth when you sneeze around anywhere near Vince. I mean, well, you should be anyway, but you don't want to make that one mistake where he's like, cut him. Because it doesn't seem like they care about having a robust, deep roster at this point.
Why are they doing
go ahead, Mike.
Cuts,
anything
though,
else?
Wade? Why are they doing the cuts? Is it just because they're trying to save money? But why though? They're doing so good money wise. I don't get it.
It's a good question. I mean, it's a big topic. I mean, part of it is, are they trying to get their expenses down as much as they can to impress a buyer? Are they cutting so that they can point to growth and profit with their on their quarterly statements, and that's just that anything that they can do to reduce their to increase profitability and reduce outgoing revenue is going to make them look better if they're looking for suitors for the brand or for the company. The other possibility is that it's just in their mindset, we just want to only have wrestlers on payroll who we're using, and we're not going to hoard talent anymore. And then we can hire who we want to hire as we go. You know, I mean, WWE gets a lot of heat on social media when they do layoffs, but they don't issue press releases when they hire new people. You know, unless you're an Olympic gold medalist. So, you know, I'm from a PR perspective, you know, if WWE found a way to tout more often, signing wrestlers, so people know, hey, we're not just, you know, cause any business, you know, especially when it's, you know, sports teams cut players all the time and they're not heartless. But it's not done for budget cuts. It's because there's a limited number of spots on a roster. And so people look at it as built in. With WWE, they did so much talent hoarding and just put so many people on payroll that they weren't even using. And now that they're trying to reduce that, they're getting a lot of heat for it. And I get during the pandemic when guys couldn't get indie work. You know, that was one context, but this is a different context now. And so I don't know if they're had pent up cuts that they just wanted to get done, or if they think they over acquired talent and it didn't really pay off. And so they're just trying to cleanse themselves, or if they're trying to send a message to talent, you know, don't say the wrong thing on social media, show up on time, be in shape or else. Alex, what's your interpretation of that? Renewed with, you know, John Morrison, and Hit Row, who were just promoted last week on SmackDown, in a feud with Jinder and Shanky, I guess, coming up. Now they're cut too. A pretty big day of cuts yesterday.
Well, as far as the cuts go, I'll tell you, none of the names on that list surprised me, with the exception of Hit Row. And I actually was going to ask you at some point during our conversation tonight if you had any insider knowledge on why that is, because it's very, very, very suspect and odd to me that they are just gone after.
Yeah.
When was the draft? 5 weeks ago? 6 weeks ago?
Yeah, about that.
And then they had 3 weeks of vignettes, and then their appearances from then on just kind of dwindled. I think they got worse each week, in my opinion, with how they were used. But it's weird, man. The Morrison thing didn't shock me. He's an older guy. You know, when was the last time he was on TV? Because I don't remember. It didn't surprise me.
He's been meditating.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The other people on the list were, I don't know, man. I honestly didn't know who a few of them were, to tell you the truth. And then the last time you've alluded to it, and I've read enough things, that the Keith Lee deal wasn't surprising at all. I think we actually might find out in the future that a lot of that was health related. They didn't want another big guy dying on them. Just to throw that out there, but not to be morbid, but just to throw that out there.
But, yeah, Keith Lee gave them plenty of reasons, honestly, and I've reported many of them. And I think they held on to him as long as they did due to health reasons, because they didn't want to let him go in the midst of getting himself better. But obviously they repackaged him and gave him a new name and made a big deal of him in the draft and then cut him anyway. And I think that is because, I will insert this. Part of why a lot of these cuts don't make sense is two words, Vince McMahon. I mean, he will make it. You can say it's erratic or impulsive, but part of it is just, he just makes a decision. Just like, okay, just do that. Like, I watched Succession and Logan Roy, and I'm just like, the way he acts, it's like, it just, yes, there's a lot of what I hear Vince McMahon is like behind the scenes too. So some of it, people just stop looking for an explanation for some of this stuff, and something that somebody does or says can be blown out of proportion, and it just leads to Vince making everyone standing around like in Succession going, what's Dad think? And Vince makes a call and some people go, really? And he goes, yeah. And then it's done. So.
Well, it's funny with Hit Row, because you wonder, the first time he saw them, he's like, oh, this is great. You know, this is good S, and then all of a sudden he saw them without BFAB and he's like, oh, they suck. Cut them.
And it's
without
possible
realizing that he's the guy that fired me. You know what I mean? It feels happened.
And I haven't heard that they were really upset about BFAB, but nobody could understand, why she was cut. It doesn't mean there wasn't a good reason, but multiple people I asked said not only didn't they know, but everybody they talked to said they were perplexed by it. She didn't have a bad reputation that I had heard ahead of time, even, going back a ways. So maybe they took a stand and that cost them, that there's a possibility there too. Word got around that they were just, quote, couldn't shut up about BFAB, so let's just cut them, that kind of thing too. So I they're going to be free to talk, so I'm curious if they do kind of speak about how this went down and how they feel about it.
Well, I don't know. I don't want to speak ill of Bruce Pritchard, but I really, really wish that he would speak up a little bit and fight for some of these things, because I do think he is one person that Vince would actually listen to if he said, listen, man, if we keep cutting these people, we're not going to have a roster, and it's going to be harder and harder for us to write these shows with no people and what I mentioned before, no levels. I just really wish he would say that, and I know that he's not, and I understand why he won't, but I think he's one of the only people that could get away with that.
Yeah. All right, Mike, anything else quick? Because I do want to get back to Jay. He's on hold still with us in Hartford.
Okay, real quick, then I'll let you guys go. How you guys feel Sasha came across tonight as a babyface? Alex, I know you're a big Sasha fan like me. I mentioned before to Wade, I like this, character with the boss character being a babyface, with her being more cocky, more conceited. I like that better compared to the babyface boss character we had several years ago. I think that character was, too soft, actually, compared to the boss character now. I like how the character is more turned up now. Yeah, how do you feel about that?
Alex, what do you think? We got her weird laugh tonight. But, clearly clearly portrayed opposite of Shotzi, positioned as a baby face. And, her reaction tonight, you know, our live correspondent characterized it a certain way. How are you feeling?
Well, I like the hybrid, kind of like Mike alluded to, the hybrid boss, babyface character. She still hasn't really turned babyface, though. She was just opposite Charlotte. And I don't understand why everybody thinks that immediately when you're opposite Charlotte, you're a babyface. But anyway, besides the point, Sasha does a great job with what she does, and she stays in her lane. But as Wade and I talked about earlier, I don't know if her attacking Shotzi and coming off like a jerk is the best thing. I understand that the character has attitude or whatever, but so does Bianca, and Bianca doesn't do stuff like that. So
yeah,
there's a fine line that they need to walk, and I like Sasha's ring work a lot. That's kind of what saves her for me. But a lot of the characters, sometimes it starts to lose me a little bit. I don't know if it's because of the people writing for her. I don't know if that's the case, but I really, really think that she needs to find a lane, stick to it, and maybe this is it. And if this is it, that's fine, but they need to write around that to make her seem likable as opposed to mean, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's real well put. Mike, any closing words from you?
That's all. I'll let you guys go, and thanks a lot for my call.
Great. Thanks, Mike. All right. Our number is 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558, or email wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. A reminder that Sam Roberts joined me earlier this week for a 90-minute preview of Sunday's Survivor Series. That's on the Blue Logo Show, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast, as opposed to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post-show feed. So just search Wade Keller in your podcast app if you haven't already and subscribe to that. It is free. Of course, you can go ad-free at Patreon, patreon.com/PWTorchVIP. That's patreon.com/PWTorchVIP. Get all the free shows with the ads and plugs removed and some other benefits. We have three tiers to choose from. And the second tier and higher includes the Focus on AEW daily podcast that we started this month. All right, Jay in Hartford hopefully is out of the parking ramp. I was stuck in a parking ramp on Monday night, and it took a while, and one car just laid on its horn for like 5 straight minutes. He was so mad. The line was moving slowly as people were paying on their way out instead of paying on their way in. How you doing, Jay?
I'm good. I actually made it home, so I'm not stuck in the garage.
Oh, great. Even better connection. Yep.
I was there. I was there live. I took my 6-year-old son for – this was his first show. And just quick reactions from him. Well, number one, he fell asleep. And I'm like, how do you sleep in this environment? But he did it. But he enjoyed Drew Roman. He doesn't know Drew that well. He was excited about going to see Roman. But, you know, the sword and everything, which I don't like, he was a fan of, and we ended up buying him an inflatable sword on the way out. So, yeah, there's that. And if I could throw in, just before I tell you a couple more thoughts on the show, I'm a big Bryan Danielson guy. I say it all the time. I know this is not an AEW show, but in hearing all the talk about Sasha and her, you know, supposed face turn and what it is, you know, it reminds me of how masterful Bryan Danielson was Wednesday night with his, to me, it was a heel turn, but it was done in such a way that if they don't want to completely turn him heel, he didn't really, you know, get on the crowd or anything like that. Everything he said was legit in, you know, how you would address the champion. And they could easily pivot back. So he's just, whereas the way that they position someone like a Sasha, and in the past Charlotte, I think they did that a lot with her, where from week to week, you don't know how to react. It's just two different worlds. And I don't understand why WWE can't do the same thing with their talent. And maybe that's just more credit to Bryan Danielson, but Sasha, to me, I'll say she has been. I thought the Shotzi attack made her a face. And then the way that she came out the next weekend, I think she teamed with, like, Naomi or some fellow faces or something. So she was completely a face to me, and the attack tonight after the match was I didn't mind it. I felt like had I been home for some reason, and you all, you've been to live shows, so you know there's a difference, but had I been home, I may have had this, oh, great, you know, she's supposed to be a face. Why did she do that? For some reason, being there live, I was just like, yeah, the way Shotzi attacked her last week, of course she should do that, and I popped, you know? So
there
I think
you go.
There's
yeah.
something
yeah.
to be said for, you know, I think there's something to be said for being there live, being kind of in the moment and understanding a bit more, whereas you're at home and you're just kind of sitting there critiquing everything. So, you know, not to say that's what anyone else is doing, but I truly believe had I been home, I would have said, oh, she's supposed to be a face. Why did she do that? But being there and you were just kind of behind her, like, that's right, Shotzi deserves it. So there's my take on Charlotte, but I'll share anything else that you want.
And actually that, tonight. Yeah, Jay, that actually kind of gets into what we said earlier too in my critique of, you know, Xavier going one-on-one, man up, you know, no friends. And then Roman's like, oh, okay, one-on-one, no friends. And then it's all an orchestrated sneak attack. It's like, but when you're in the building, you just get caught up in the drama of it. And now the question is, who's right? Like, or what's right? Do you play for the crowd pop in the building, or do you try to tell a more logical storyline where your heroes, your leaders, your baby faces, the wrestlers you position to get cheered, have some sort of constitution and set of principles that actually, upon reflection, is worthy of admiring instead of having to rationalize and make excuses for? And that is a big question, and it's not everybody agrees on that. Some think in pro wrestling, it's all about just get revenge and let the crowd pop. But at what point, you know, it's kind of like in politics and redistricting, you know, it's like, well, if they do it, then we're going to do it, as opposed to if they do it, let's run against that. But then you lose power and you can't. And that's sort of the Xavier example. If I lived up to Reigns' standards, I'd be a pushover and I wouldn't get a physical and psychological leg up 48 hours before a big match. I just don't think that would be explains it well enough. The announcer's reaction to Sasha with a cheap shot after a handshake is completely different than if an actual full-fledged heel did it. Then they'd be decrying it and say, oh, that's awful if Jinder Mahal did it, but Sasha does it. And it's like, oh, good for her. She's such a leader. And that's the part that kind of drives me a little nuts, even if it's always fighting fire with fire and not instigating it. And if that's the line they draw, then maybe that's good enough. I don't know. I struggle with that because you're right, Jay. You're in the building and you see fans pop, and they're not really thinking about that, at least in the moment.
Yeah, no, totally. And to your point, if commentary would explain it, you know, maybe, you know, better, you know, to kind of say, as opposed to just whatever, and I'll go back and watch tonight's show at some point to see kind of how it came across and if I have any type of different reactions. But it is, you know, I'm glad I'm not on the writing team. Let's just say that for all of the, like you said, it's not hating. It's valid, you know, criticism, but constructive criticism, but I'm just glad that I'm not in that position. They do have a tough job, but on that subject, right, I'll say Shotzi prior to her heel turn, she was just Shotzi. In NXT, I didn't care for the tank. You know, we ask for different, and forgive me, I think Alex is your co-host tonight, right, who may have alluded to earlier, how we ask for different, so we have to give different a chance. So she was just okay. It wasn't like, oh, I can't stand Shotzi. She was just okay, but I wasn't really a fan. And that attack on Sasha and then the promo the next week, like, yep, and I'm going to, you know, do whatever I got to do. Don't need a tank to do it. I'm like, all of a sudden I see star now. So, you know, I was disappointed that she lost, but I understand that to me was, I thought they put on a very good match. I thought that was a good performance that will kind of, depending on what they do for follow-up, that hopefully they can kind of sustain her at that upper tier of female performers. I thought she did a great job tonight and just in the last couple of weeks. So I hope they stay the course because they have a tendency to, you know, again, turn, you know, on a dime next, you know, she's face or something or doing something that doesn't make sense. But I like the direction they've gone with Shotzi. So there's my take on her. Who, by the way, the crowd didn't know, I think.
Yeah.
Harper, if you don't mind me saying, I'll just get on into a couple of things I noticed.
Yeah.
Every time I've been going pretty much, like I went when I was a kid and then I didn't go for a while. I've been going pretty much yearly since like 09 at this point to at least a Raw, one Raw a year or something like that. And it's mainly what I think to be a casual crowd or a crowd of children, you know, parents have brought their children. The one difference was when I went to Money in the Bank, maybe, I don't know, 2 years ago, I think, 2019, I believe. And that crowd was the most exciting crowd I'd ever been a part of. Pay-per-view crowd, you know, people had come from everywhere. It wasn't just Harvard. You can tell they were there from Boston and wherever else. And so, and they knew everything. They knew everyone. Tonight, the crowd, they had no clue who Shotzi was. I heard you ask someone about the crowd's reaction to Sheamus. I thought he got a positive response, but there was a part of me saying, like, do people know who Sheamus are? Because a lot of them were just sitting on their hands. And maybe that was they didn't know how to take him. But there's just for WWE being, you know, Stanford's the headquarters, you know, they claim, you know, from New York, this and that, Connecticut is their backyard. Hartford crowds aren't really the most exciting, to be honest. I'll say Roman, he got the biggest reaction, Wade. And I caught some of the tail end of your on-site correspondence, so I'll be curious how what I say differs from him when I listen to the show back. But he got an awesome reaction, but it was so mixed. And I don't know if it was, you know, half of us like him, half of us don't. I think it was more so we're supposed to boo, but he's so good we want to cheer. And so that was the mixture. Like, I found myself doing both. And for people on the floor, I see where you get caught up in the moment. You can't help but raise the finger when he stares at you and raises the finger. Everyone there was like, yep, the fingers were up, but you could also hear boos. So he's just a star. That's the one exception. I'm like, okay, cheer him, boo him. He's getting that reaction. And I understand when they say, hey, if you're getting a reaction, it's working. I'll throw in also that I bought my ticket, Wade, on yesterday. I didn't think I'd be able to make the show when I first heard about it. Schedule opened up, but I kind of forgotten about it until this week. Like, oh, okay, SmackDown Hartford, I'm going to go, and I'll take my son to his first show. And it was actually difficult to get good seats. And I think that this was their first visit here post-pandemic. So, you know, I could see where, like, I'm thinking, you know, day of, I could probably even go get something, not floor section, but, you know, lower if I wanted to, because I know my six-year-old son's going to be like, I can't see, we're not close enough, you know. But I tried to explain to him before, Trevor, we're going to be kind of up high. You know, he's like, okay. And Harvard's not that huge of an arena. So even being kind of towards maybe we were kind of at the front of the most upper section, you could still see pretty well. So he had no complaints. But I was just surprised that not sellout, it wasn't a sellout, but that they had sold so many tickets and there were so few options left for trying to get closer seats the day before, which was a good thing. That's good for them. But again, then the crowd isn't as lively as you'd expect being there first. So, and I'm going on and on, I'll stop after this, but I went to the gym today for the first time in 2 years and I left feeling like, oh my God, that was so great. Like, oh, I can't wait. I'm going back next week, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to renew my membership, all of that. My first WWE show in 2 years. Okay. Like, you know, like, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed seeing my son enjoy it. But for all of the, I guess, flack that we give them for the brand versus brand, I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of it. When you're going there live, you're kind of hoping to see that. You're thinking, okay, Raw guys are going to be here tonight. And you don't get much of it. You didn't get Becky, which was a huge disappointment. For them building up this brand versus brand thing on Sunday, when you're there live, you kind of want to see, you know, at home, I'm like, oh, here we go. But again, live, you want to see the other show show up and they get into a brawl and you're thinking, oh, this is going to happen. I was hoping Big E was going to come out, but the more I'm like, well, is he? You know, there's no Becky. There's no one from any of these other matches. There's no RK-Bro. You know, you kind of knew you'd get Big E, but it just, there wasn't enough of a sell for Survivor Series to me. Like, if you're there live, and I get at that point, commentary's job is to sell to the crowd or to sell to the viewers at home, but if you're there live, there's nothing to make you say, oh, I want to watch on Sunday. You know, you look up at the Tron and you see the video board above and you kind of see what the viewers at home see. Oh, yeah, Shinsuke's fighting, I can't even tell you the U.S. champion, Damian Priest. Shinsuke's fighting Damian Priest, but there was nothing there as far as from an in-ring perspective to get you excited for that. So that was a bit disappointing. And from a live attendee standpoint, there was no real build towards Survivor Series, in my opinion.
Talk about the crowd reaction for Drew McIntyre and Big E relative to Reigns, as much as you can compare. And I'll say, you know, this idea that, well, Reigns get a reaction, and so they're right when they say, you know, that's good. I told Tony Khan a couple of weeks back when I interviewed him about the Cody reaction, and he was kind of using that argument of, hey, you know, because I brought up Cena and Reigns, is that a good or bad thing? He's like, hey, you know, hey, people reacted. That's a great comparison. Cena and Reigns are top stars. Cena and Reigns were top stars for a variety of reasons, in part because they were given all the TV time and they were given victories and they were given a push and they were talked about and positioned in that way. And of course, not everybody would succeed in that spot. But a lot of being a top star is how you're positioned and who steps into the ring and loses to you. So the goal when you're positioned, when a promoter positions you as a babyface and matches you against heels, the ideal reaction is to get cheered. And when you're positioned as a heel against babyfaces, the ideal reaction is to get booed. If instead you get a mixed response and it's intense, that is not ideal. That is not what they want. It is a good consolation prize compared to the other bar, which is no reaction or the complete opposite reaction. So a mixed reaction is second out of four. It's not the best reaction. The best reaction is if you're heel, you get all boos. And if you're face, you get all cheers. If you get cheers and boos, then it's intense. That's a good consolation prize. But let's not reframe it as a victory for the booker or a victory for the wrestler. It's just better than pure apathy. That's hardly like a great standard for a promoter. So that's more. That's not aimed at UJ as much as sort of a – I mean a little bit. You mentioned that what they say. But
of course.
Ideally – you want Big E and Drew to get wildly cheered and Reigns to get booed right now because everything they're doing, other than making Reigns super cool, is aimed at getting him booed. Obviously, he's super cool and, you know, there's things you definitely don't like about him, but, you know, there's a reason he's selling T-shirts that, you know, he's cool right now. So, anyway, I say that. I throw back to you your thoughts on how Drew and Big E did crowd reaction compared to Reigns when they were opposite of him.
I love the question because I actually took a couple of notes. I'm like, oh, if I get to call in, I'm going to tell Wade about Drew. Before I say it, though, so let me ask you if I can. I mean, Roman, you said I think they're doing everything they can to get him booed, and I think he's doing what he should to get booed, but how do you – he is cool. How do you – in his case, I see him as an exception, and I was so eager to see – how crowds would respond to him when we went back to live crowds. Cause I'm like, oh, he's killing it as a heel. They're going to boo the heck out of him. And then they didn't because he's cool. So do we point the finger at, do we say Roman turned down the cool factor? Like, how do you avoid that? If we could quickly, before I talk about Drew, like,
I'll give a quick answer and then I'll throw to Alex Rizos. You make sure you do a good job building up his babyface opponents. If you position the right baby faces against any popular heel, the fans might cheer the heel a little, but ultimately, as long as the baby face gets cheered more, if some people are cheering both wrestlers, but there's the only people being booed, the only boos are coming towards the heel, then you've done your job well enough. I don't really have a big critique on that. Alex, what do you think?
I completely agree. The baby face has to be a big deal and they'll get cheered and everything will be fine.
Yeah.
That's really all you can do. You're always going to have people like I'll be honest right now. Roman Reigns is my favorite thing about wrestling. Roman could probably wrestle Jesus at this point, and I'd probably root for Roman. So you're always going to have people like that. And that just kind of is what it is. But for the vast majority, because I am obviously not, for the vast majority, you just need to make sure the babyface is likable and well-positioned and doesn't look like a goof. And I'll throw in, too, that he actually has a chance. If he actually has a chance and he's likable and he's not a goof, then you'll be okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Thanks both.
All right, Jay, yeah, so go ahead with your notes.
So I jotted down that Hartford loves Drew McIntyre. I was surprised at the pop, and that's the honest truth. So I'm like, I got to write this down. So if I call in, I'm going to tell Wade Hartford loves Drew. I was shocked. I did not expect, because I love Drew during the pandemic era. I hate that he didn't get to have his championship run initially in front of a crowd. You know, they kind of dropped the ball with him a bit towards the end of that title run and then with the rematches, and I'm thinking crowds are souring on him. But Hartford tonight, his pop was the biggest of the night. I jotted down Drew, Sasha, and Ricochet as the biggest pops of the night. And that, to me, kind of in that order, Sasha may have even maybe tied with Drew, but she got a huge reaction. But that was all until Big E came out at the end of the night. I think the biggest pop of the night goes to Big E when he came out to make the save. But Drew, my answer on him is Hartford loves him. And I felt like he, you know, if he were like in a match opposite Roman Reigns tonight in Hartford, you know, you may have gotten a bit more of the boost that you wanted because they were really all about Drew. And that could go back way to like, you know, the casual type crowd, you know, and the kids love him because of the sword. Like my son, we bought a sword. He didn't even know Drew well before tonight, you know, other than maybe seeing him on television and passing. All of a sudden tonight, hey, I want his sword. So that could be a part of why Hartford such a big, you know, has such a big Drew support, but they loved him. He could do no wrong. And then of course, and this would have been after the show, but during the dark match, there was a big, Big E got the crowd going with Drew, Day Rocks. And he's like, all right, Hartford, one more time before we go. Drew, Day Rocks. And everybody was all about it. So Hartford loves Drew. That's pretty much all I can say about it. And if that's any indication for how other cities will respond, then I'll say he'll be fine. And I didn't want to see him back in the title picture, but after tonight I'm thinking, okay, I could see them building him up for a match with Roman because their match last year was absolutely stellar. So, you know, if that's the route that they end up going, then I'm all for it. But Hartford loved him. That's I give him pop of the night right under Big E. Drew, Sasha, Ricochet. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. So, Jay, since we did spend a good amount of time with our previous correspondent, just I kind of trust you. Just to throw it to you. Anything else stand out from the show, from your experience you want to share? And if not, that's fine, too, if you think you covered everything.
Yeah, no, Xavier Woods. Xavier, you know, I'm a fan. I enjoy the New Day, even though they're, you know, I actually enjoy them more right now where they're kind of doing their own thing a bit. It's a bit refreshing. They were getting stale. Although I missed Kofi, even I heard the crowd around me, someone going, where's the third guy? Referring to Kofi Kingston.
Oh, wow.
And I'm thinking, he lives right in Boston. I mean, yeah, maybe he's injured or something. But Xavier Woods, I think part of when he came out he didn't get a great reaction either time. And I don't think it's because he's not over. I think it's just, again, with the casual crowd, you know, he's not Brock, he's not Roman, and it's New Day, but it's not New Day together. So some people, like parents who brought their children, may not have even known who he was, just coming out, you know, hair down, no trombone, you know what I mean? But what also hurt him, his new music. When he came, and I'm a viewer, you know, I watch every week, but when he came out for the final segment, when his music hit, I didn't know who it was without looking at the Titantron saying King Woods. So you lose that moment to get the pop because it's like, wait, who's this? Oh, yeah, that's right. That's Xavier's new music. Whereas when, for Big E, y'all want to go big? When that hits, oh, man, the crowd comes unglued. You see it on TV, and I saw it tonight. But to me, it just kind of sucked the air out of the room for Xavier Woods. So I hope everyone gets used to the new song, or maybe he needs a different song. But it was just like, who's this coming out? Oh, it's Xavier. And he didn't get a pop until he got in the ring and kind of, you know, posed to the crowd. And then, and that was the other thing about the Hartford crowd, Wade, is that I noticed they'll respond. They'll have their moments where they really come alive, but you have to make them. So like I mentioned, when Roman put that finger up and said, acknowledge me, you know, all the fingers are up. Or Xavier, kind of quiet as he came to the ring, once he got to the ring and posed on the turnbuckle, he's like, oh, okay, there's the pop. Like, oh, we were waiting for you to do that. Entertain us. You know what I mean? So
I
felt bad for him. Again, at home as a viewer, I was like, oh, I love that segment. He's getting main event time. He's opposite Roman Reigns. And I think he's making the best of it. I really do. But being there live, I was a bit more sour on it, where, again, you know, some segments you're a bit more excited about live. This one I was a bit more down about just because the crowd around didn't seem to react as much to Xavier as you would want, I think. Which, you know, and there were a lot of – yeah, go ahead.
A broader question about the specifics you're saying here. Do you think the crowd started more excited than they ended, or do you think they held on to – that WWE produced a show that helped, you know, kind of kept the excitement level where it was at the beginning? Like, did they help or hurt themselves over the course of 2.5 hours?
Because they saved the biggie for the end. I'll say they kept it, if not actually, you know, raised it, because the crowd loved biggie. They were into him. And that was, I think that was the best move. Again, here I am all night going, where is someone from Raw? You know what I mean? But the fact that they saved Big E till the end was the way to go. And then, of course, they had a dark match after involving him, which sent the crowd home happy. But, no, I wouldn't say that the crowd really waned at all. They started with Sami Zayn, who, you know, was very entertaining as a heel, like walking out on the match and then saying, okay, good night, Massachusetts, or something like that. And, and I'm not a – I've been wanting to call in Wade to say that I think he's doing well in the role, but I actually miss babyface Sami Zayn. I don't like the long hair. I'm like, okay, like, just go back to being a babyface. I miss that Sami, that guy. I just love to root for him. I did boo him. You know, he called us Massachusetts, so I had to boo him. But I think the crowd kept their level of energy, and the one match that I missed, I took my son out for cotton candy. He was begging for cotton candy, and the cotton candy took longer than the chicken tenders and the fries, like, ironically. Like, I don't know what that was about, but that line was so slow. We missed the whole Naomi, Aaliyah, Natalya, and Shotzi. We missed the whole segment. I think it could have been a little quiet there, because I remember thinking from being out in the concourse area, like, I didn't even think the match was happening yet. Like, and then all of a sudden you hear the bell and the ring announcement, and I'm like, oh, okay. So I would say they were probably pretty quiet for the women's match. And again, casual crowd, I'm sure they had no clue who Aaliyah was. And Natalya, I don't know what I think she's a heel now, but I have no idea. Her and Tamina as tag champs, I felt like they were like face one week and heel the next throughout their whole title reign. I don't know what that was. So, yeah, I think the lowest point from a crowd reaction standpoint would have probably been that match, because I didn't know anything was going on in the arena. I thought it was just commercials.
Yeah. All right. Well, Jay, thanks. I really appreciate you calling in and giving us some really good details on the ebb and flow of things and the crowd reactions at the show tonight. Always good to hear from you.
No, always good to. I appreciate you letting me kind of call in and ramble. And before I hang up or before I go, one more thing about Hartford being a casual crowd. I think any other crowd or pay-per-view crowd, you would have heard a lot of pit row or a lot of, you know, granted, it wasn't a large, you know, they were lower tier wrestlers, I guess, but hit row was kind of maybe the largest of the acts that were released. You didn't hear really any of that, which kind of caught me by surprise. So, again, I think a lot of the people there tonight, granted, you have a lot of hardcores, you know, this is New England, but a lot of people there probably had no clue who they were, that they had been released. So I thought that was interesting that there was none of that from what I heard. So that's all I got, sir.
Great. Thanks, Jay. Well, I'm sure talk to you soon.
Thank you. Talk soon. Bye-bye.
All right. Javier Machado, PW Torch VIP contributor from Miami, has been listening in. We have some entrance music for Javier there. Javier, welcome back to the roundtable. We missed you. We kept your seat warm, or tried. How's it going?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Alex. How's it going?
Hey, what's up, Javier?
The no, Nick, you can't steal my my music gimmick. So.
That's
just
right.
Put that out there. This is actually first the WWE show I've watched since the Raw before Crown Jewel. So was interesting. It was interesting coming back, particularly since, you know, seeing Sami Zayn complaining about his documentary. I was like, we're still on this? today.
You didn't miss anything. That was kind of out of the blue too. We hadn't heard about his documentary for a while.
Yeah. I figured it out after a second, but I'm like, wow, that was just kind of weird out of nowhere. Alex, you asked and I delivered. The Nakamura, since he's won the title in August 13th, has not defended it on TV since. He's defended it 12 times on live shows. Yeah.
That doesn't
so
count.
He's, yeah,
What live shows are these? I mean, I know they've done a few house shows. That seems like more defensive than I would have predicted if he didn't do any on TV.
Yeah, there were a total of 12, and most of them were Cruz, like right after he won it. There was one with Seth Rollins, and then there were a handful – well, and the more recent ones, which I think were like the last six shows they did, or been against Jinder Mahal. So,
okay, yeah.
Yeah, the most recent one being in the UK tour. Those were the Jinder Mahal ones.
Sure, that makes sense. Yep.
Yeah. So.
Cool. What else? It's interesting talking to you after not having seen WWE for a while, with you know New Japan pulling you away from the rest of your regular world.
The Shotzi thing was one of the things that stood out to me because she looks completely different from where I remembered her. Mostly like what they're doing. I just didn't like what they were scripted to say. It sounded overly scripted with, you know, her obviously setting up Sasha Banks for, you know, what Sasha Banks was going to say. Outside of, you know, but the general attitude and the general character, it's something I like. It's interesting to see where they go from here. Same thing with Toni Storm. After you know seeing her that she you know she's alive and around, it was nice to see her and involved with Charlotte, even though it's probably not gonna you know go too far. But that was cool, and did not miss Sasha Banks' laugh at all. The opening, I really liked the beginning of that, where they had the crown and everything, and then Roman Reigns comes out and says, "What is this crap? Who do you think I am? I don't need any of this."
Yes, I
thought that was awesome. I cannot wait to hear Todd cover this on The Fix, because I'm sure he's going to love that part of it. What I did not like, well, and I liked that Xavier Woods came out and was a, you know, more serious, you know, with everything that's been going on. And, I like that stuff. But then when he said, "Oh, I'm going to, you know, we're going to destroy this, you know, you say this doesn't matter to you." Didn't like that he started selling. And then when he ran into the ring, when they're about to destroy the crown, I'm saying, please go in there, recover the crown and destroy it yourself, so you don't look like a chump. And sure enough, they grab him, they destroy it in front of him. He looks like he's, you know, "Oh no, the crowd." And I'm like, they made him look like, I think what the kids call a punk ass bitch at that moment. And, you know, so, and I know it's all about, you know, for Vince, it's going to be all about Big E being the one that looks big at the end. But do you really need to, like, you know, and I know, you know, don't destroy Woods like that. Don't destroy that character like that. Just, you know, have, because I thought it would have been a great moment if he gets the crown and says, "I told you I don't need this," and then him breaking himself. You could take him out, you know, after that. But, I did not like that part of it.
While you're here, Javier, let me read an email on the opening segment that you brought up. Joe from New York said, "Hey, guys, I got to be honest. I thought the opening segment was so bad I turned the show off. Roman spends 10 minutes wasting his time with a career mid-carder, and let's be honest, he's the third man in a third three-man team." Speaking of Xavier, Roman's supposed to be the top guy in the company, yet I don't get that feeling when I watch crap like this. I've said it before, and I will say it again. These are fighting words, people. Roman is not a draw. Roman is more like the best player on the last place team. For example, think back when A-Rod played for the Texas Rangers. He'd win the MVP, but his team would still be in last place. Well, that's Roman, in my opinion. The fact is, the whole time he's been champion, he faces either part-time main eventers or career mid-carders who get one-off title matches with him. That makes for a boring championship, and it just run, and it just shows how WWE doesn't care. They're lazy, and they have no full-time main eventers for this guy to face. Final point. WWE fans need to smarten up and stop going to WWE pay-per-views. Well, WWE doesn't care about pay-per-views anymore because they got a flat rate from Peacock, or the fact that they still charge pay-per-view ticket prices, and the people who are paying for those tickets are getting ripped off. WWE will never grow their fan base or add new fans booking crap like they did in the opening segment. Wake up, Vince. It's 2021, almost 2022, not 1985. Alex, your response to that first, and then back to Javier.
Well, that was negative. I don't agree. I'm going to tackle the draw part first before I get into the rest of it. Roman Reigns is a draw, and the proof of that is the fact that he has battled career mid-carders in main event feuds and has made them feel important. That's your case. He kind of made his own case there. For why Reigns is a draw. The other part is he is right. They don't have main eventers for him to face. So he does have to face career mid-carders and elevate them. That's the only option right now because they don't have enough people on the roster that are perceived as higher up other than the part-timers, which is WWE's fault, not Reigns. He's doing the best of what he's given. On the opening segment, I actually thought it was pretty effective. I liked it a lot. Kind of to what Javier said, I was kind of hoping that if Woods did in fact recover, he would destroy the crown itself. I kind of thought that too. But I liked that he didn't care about all the other stuff, but he did care about the crown. I don't know why, but to me that came off as like, I don't know, I guess that's the one thing he cares about is that actual crown, because he did have that childhood dream of being king of the ring, and they were kind of crapping on his childhood dream. That was how I took it anyway. So to see him kind of get more frustrated when they went after the one thing he actually cares about. but that's the long and short of it for me. I think that's being overly negative. I do agree about them charging pay-per-view ticket prices for things that aren't really pay-per-views anymore. They are big shows, but I don't know if you can really continue to hype them that way when some of them come off as a better version of Raw or SmackDown. I get that. But I'm not one to what's the word I'm looking for? Champion boycotts. So,
Javier.
Yeah, on the pay-per-view things, you in theory, there've been a couple that lately that haven't. In theory, you're going to get actual finishes and actual full matches, and in theory, the resolution of the stuff that they're staying up on SmackDown and on Raw. It does feel like there's been a shift in that, and if they continue going that way, then that's I don't want to see any more roll up finishes. I don't want to see any of the stuff that you end up seeing SmackDown with distraction finishes and stuff like that. You know, if I'm going to sit down and watch a pay per view, I want to see the act. I don't want to see shenanigans. I'm worried about the Charlotte Becky match because it's one of those where who can afford to lose this. And it could be very easy. Oh, we're just going to cop out and give you a fake finish. So, as long as the pay-per-views give you real finishes for the most part, unless, the story actually requires it and it's not just to protect somebody, there's still a little bit of value there. And what was the other part of that? And I agree with Alex with the whole, he has elevated other people. That Jimmy Uso feud is going to be something that is going to be fondly remembered because of the personal nature of the story. I'm actually interested in the Woods thing because, he is in there with the third guy of New Day. And while this is not going to be, you know, Xavier Woods is not going to be an actual threat for Roman Reigns, the story that you're going to tell, particularly since it's leading to the Big E thing, Big E confrontation anyway. You know, it's something that ties the time, and as long as the story is interesting, that's good. Now, if you rate like the championship on who the opponents are, and then that's how you perceive, you know, that's the lens you watch wrestling through, then I can understand. But WWE does tend to favor less the actual matchups and more the actual story that they're telling there. And in that case, you know, it doesn't really matter who it is as long as the story is compelling and makes you want to watch it.
Javier, what else on SmackDown tonight is on your list of things to bring up?
Did you notice, I don't know if this is new or not, but did you notice that on the little blurb thing that they actually said that Sasha Banks was on the Mandalorian finally?
Oh, no, I didn't make note of that. I didn't notice it. Good for them, I guess.
So just, I'm surprised they finally admitted it. What do you think about the Xia Li? I don't know. I know they've been doing promos, but I don't know if this has been, you know, sometimes they repeat them. Was this a new Xia Li promo? Because I found it interesting and that they put that much.
It was.
Yeah, go ahead, Alex.
Yeah.
It was completely new. All of her other promos made her look like a Mortal Kombat character where she was just kind of doing like fighting moves, and she had like I said, like gear on, like very similar to Mortal Kombat. That's what the whole thing reminded me of. That thing tonight with the cartoon comic book, that was totally new. That's the first time I played that.
What do you think?
Now, the question is, is this going to like actually, is this a good thing? Because normally I would say yes, but you know, you had Aleister Black getting that same treatment and then he disappeared. You had Elias getting the same treatment and he disappeared. So I'm kind of worried that we will not see any promos for a couple of days, and then we'll hear that she's part of the next batch of people released.
I mean, WWE's teaching you not to get too invested in a lot of wrestlers who were part of the draft. I've been surprised by some of the cutbacks, but I think anybody else would be more surprising who's left, you know, like who's even a candidate. I mean, I guess they could like cut Sheamus and be like, whoa. But like Rich Holland, you know, would have been surprising, I guess, is Hit Row. Xia Li, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm trying to like talk and figure out if there's a rhyme or reason to any of this, and there really isn't. So I'm not ruling it out. So stay guarded, people. Javier warned you.
I do have to, before I forget, I do have to bring up the something about the AEW thing, because I've heard a question on whether Danielson, you know, I'm not sure if it's really a heel turn. He held a hold after the match was over for an extended period of time, and then he's going to out and take out all of his target's friends as opposed to going straight to his target directly. These are heel things.
Yeah.
Bryan Danielson is a heel. So, I mean, questioning some of the morality around these parts. yeah, you know, my favorite line though, and Alex, you mentioned that Reigns is like your favorite thing in wrestling. I think my favorite thing in wrestling is the interplay between, Kayla and Paul Heyman, because it's just, they're on the screen.
That's in my top five.
It's so electric. And he had my favorite line, which was a great play on words, where he said, there are no bluffs on the island of relevancy. I thought that was great.
I like that too. Yep. There's so many aspects to this, like, Roman Reigns universe at this point, you know, the island of relevancy. I mean, it's like there's so many catchphrases and nicknames and t-shirts, and they just introduce them a little bit at a time. It sort of sounds good. It grabs you like Velcro, and it just sort of sticks, and then they like weave it in, but in a way that doesn't feel like WWE Universe forced or championship opportunity forced. What's the other one for the non-title match? A championship contenders match. Like, it actually kind of feels like there are things that Roman's really hung up on and he likes hearing, so everyone says it around him to keep him happy. And then they, you know, work him into the promos. It's a well done. It's a good version of WWE getting getting phrases over.
You mentioned something about the cop out last week. Were you guys referring to the kneeling situation or?
Yeah. They built the show for an hour 45 minutes or close to 2 hours around. Someone's going to kneel. Someone's going to be humiliated. It's going to be so humiliating. They showed, animated graphics of Roman kneeling to Xavier and then taking a knee and then vice versa. And then we get a DQ finish that's declared a no contest, which I'm sure, Javier, you'll explain to me why in WWE logic that's a no contest and not a DQ.
It actually
wasn't.
I did catch the end of that, and Cole says that it's a disqualification. And then because that's the reason I was asking is because then Reigns kneels in the ring, but then they put the crown on him. So that's what I'm saying, because it wasn't really a cop out; it was more of a subversion of the finish, because it was an actual DQ.
Yeah.
He actually did lose that because Cole said that on commentary. And then when he kneels, God, I forgot his name. McAfee, there we go. Wow.
Paul Heyman and Uso.
A couple of weeks.
Xavier?
McAfee on commentary said that, look, he's kneeling.
Yep.
Yeah, Pat McAfee said, look, he's kneeling. And then, he kneels, he gets on one knee, he bends the knee, and then they put the crown on him. So it was less of a cop-out, more of a subversion, because, you did get an actual winner, and you did get him kneeling, just not the way that you expected.
And I when I watched that, it's like, are they going to count this? You lost. So I'm thinking that, and Xavier's like, it was a no contest last week. So I thought, I was trying to frame it in my head, just watching it initially. And then when Xavier brought it up, and I'm like, was that Xavier? Because Xavier didn't brag about it. Obviously, why would he? It was, as you say, a subversion of it. But if you get beat up and you went on a technicality and then the other guy kneels, like, Xavier should say that's, like, bring it up, own your finish if you're going to try to count that as a payoff to what you hyped. And they just sort of, like you say, did it on the sly, but then don't own it the next week, and they just think that'll be enough for people to be okay.
Yeah, and when you have a history of straight-up cop-outs for as long as they do, it's like – you kind of like when you do something, because I thought it was interesting, but consider the fact that all the times they cop out, it kind of like your brain immediately goes there. Because I could see why someone would say, oh, yeah, they didn't give us what we wanted, but it was just an actual, they did. It's just not the way you expected. It's like whenever you watch, read any books that ever have a prophecy in it, the prophecy never comes into play the way they said it. It's always a change in wording or what have you. That's kind of what that was. And I thought that, in a vacuum, in a bubble, I thought it would be great. But, yeah, I can totally understand why people would be upset, because you're actually expecting what they literally told you as opposed to, you actually ended up getting.
And part of it is, the announcers were, like, if they had said, McAfee goes, Roman's taken a knee, but it's not the knee that Xavier wanted. It's not the knee that he deserves with the way that this match ended, but they didn't do that. So it's like there's this asterisk next to what they did to say, well, we didn't cop out, but there was no emotional satisfaction in it. And there wasn't even an overt acknowledgement that it was fulfilled. It looked like he was kneeling so the crown could be more put on him easily. So the idea is you want McAfee going as he did tonight, for 1 minute I was dumb, but Roman knows what he's doing. Like,
yeah.
McAfee didn't gloat last week. Oh, look at this. Roman outsmarted. He took a knee, but it's not the knee that Xavier wanted or something along those lines. And there was no emotional payoff for anybody. So if you want to give them points for cleverness, fine. It's still a cop out from what they hyped. And then if you're going to do it, get some heat on it. And they didn't.
Yeah. His word was like, look, his knee is bent. So yeah. that was the way yeah. He delivered that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I get it. I get it. But like, if it weren't for their history, I think it would probably gotten over a lot better. Let me see if I have anything. I'm going to say something apparently is going to be like that. I think I'm in the minority of, I haven't heard any, I think you might've mentioned that. Did Jason Powell make a case for Big E winning on the Survivor Series?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I'm on his camp because, I think that, Reigns already has enough equity that, I mean, assuming that you were going to make Big E like one of your big guys, it's going to be, you know, like a Randy Orton that is in the mix, in the permanent mix to be in for the championship. I think Big E winning, even if it's somewhat tainted, not super tainted, but somewhat tainted, is going to end up being good for him. And I think that he gained a lot more than what Reigns would lose. Now, if you had, you know, someone that you're going to, you know, that's going to be the guy that you're going to make by beating Reigns, like coming up like really soon, then yeah, don't give it a Big E. But since Reigns is going to be wrestling The Rock and Lashley probably one more time before, you know, that comes into play, I think you have enough time to continue building what he's doing. Cause I mean, Okada had in New Japan had a amazing run as a champion where, you know, he defended the title a whole bunch of times. He still lost though when there were tournaments. So, and you know, so you don't remember that, you know, so that kind of, you know, so in this case where there is no change in title or anything, I think it ends up doing Big E a lot, you know, much more good. I don't think they're all going right to do that because I think it's going to be a situation where it's going to end with, you know, Reigns winning and then, you know, The Rock coming out and sort of like how when Lesnar came out, SummerSlam, I think it was.
All right. So, Alex, what say you to Javier's counter argument?
I understand where you guys are coming from. I'm not disputing the logic behind it. I just wouldn't do it. I'm giving the Big E thing a shot because I feel like I should and I like him, but he's good, but I don't think he's special. And Wade, you kind of touched on this earlier, but I know that some of these other guys can give me 25 to 30 minutes in a main event style match. I don't know if Big E can do that yet. And I also don't know if he can do that with somebody who is lesser than him. Honestly, at this point, I'm hoping that Seth ends up with the title somehow in the next 4 to 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever. And so for me, with that being kind of where I hope, and I also kind of think that might happen. I think Lashley's a possibility too. I don't think Big E will be the champion going into WrestleMania is my point.
Mm.
So because of my thought process on that,
yeah,
I don't think you can have him beat Reigns and then turn around and drop that title in the next. But again, I would say worst case scenario, he's not champion in 12 weeks, but I think it'll be sooner than that. I think it's very possible that Big E, much like Drew last year, is the challenger at WrestleMania and not the champion. So I think we need to think about that also.
Javier, what say you?
Yeah, if you don't think he's, I was bringing it up if he's your main guy and the guy you're going to go with. If he is going to lose it, if you're planning on giving it to somebody else within the next, you know, like I said, before WrestleMania, I'm thinking long-term, if he is someone that you're going to build for the future to be in the same breath as like a Randy Orton that, you know, whenever you need somebody at the top of the card, if you're going to build him, if you don't have the faith that he's going to be that guy, and you know, I'm not in the building with them, so I don't know if they have that same level of faith at him, but if you are going to build him to be that guy, then you go with Big E in that one. If he's going to lose it like on Raw the next day, then obviously not. But if you're going to go keep it, you know, if you're going to make him the guy and give him a couple of wins, I mean to bring it kind of back over to New Japan, it's kind of like Shingo to me hasn't really gotten there because who's the current IWGP heavyweight world heavyweight champion. He hasn't gotten there yet because of, you know, the injuries and the pandemic situation, stuff like that. And he doesn't really feel like the champion because there's too many question marks in the air. And I think he needs to beat a couple of big guys in order to get like the stamp of approval. So I think if Big E gets a stamp of approval, if you're going to give him a stamp of approval, you know, that's where I would do it.
We are and we aren't. I already think that Big E is cemented now at this point. I think you're right. I think he's already there. I think he's going to be a main eventer from now on. I don't think he's going to Kevin Owens and end up being in the Intercontinental title picture in 6 months. I don't think that's going to happen. I think Big E is a main eventer now. I just also think that he's not going to be champion at WrestleMania this year. I don't think this is a 6, 7, 8 month title reign. I just don't. I think it's something they hotshotted a little bit. I think they're going to take it off of him. I think he'll get it back, and I think he'll probably be champion again, you know, at WrestleMania or right after. Like, I think he'll be champion going into SummerSlam, if that makes any sense. But they're building up too much there, and there's people that are going to get another run. Unlike SmackDown, Raw has a lot of people in that picture. And, I think they're going to move it, and I think beating Reigns right now is a huge mistake. I think you need to build up the equity as much as you possibly can.
Pierre, anything else you want to bring up?
Other than I'm with all the mentioning of The Rock lately and on my news feeds and stuff, there's like – every other, I know he has a movie that just came out, but like every other article I read is talking about, you know, when he started wrestling and stuff like that. And there's been a lot of wrestling related articles about The Rock that makes me think that this is, you know, the way I follow entertainment closely too. It makes me think that he is for sure going to make an appearance and probably have like a confrontation. I don't think he's going to be involved in the match, but I'm like 100% sure we're going to see The Rock at Survivor Series to set something up for the future.
I don't think Jimmy Fallon's not going to bring up The Rock on his own, and you don't want to raise expectations and not deliver. So, I mean, short of confirmation, because it's not, I am not 100% sure, but it is very, very, very reasonable to connect some dots and go, you know, tune in Sunday and you're probably going to see him in some form or fashion. I mean, if it turns out to be a commercial for his movie, some people are going to be let down.
Or a video package.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I have two questions for Javier before he goes.
All right.
All right. The first question is, if The Rock's going to be there, do you think that for the 25th anniversary, we'll break out some Die Rocky Die chants?
Man, if I were there, I would. Just for the hell of it.
All right. And question two, which is more serious, because I don't know the next time I'll talk to you. So we are nearing the end of Survivor Series season, thankfully. So it's time to start talking about my favorite wrestling event of the year, known as the Royal Rumble. If you had to rank the top three people that are going to win the Royal Rumble this year, who do you pick? I don't need to know why, because we'll end up talking about this for an hour, but just your top three.
Man, I had as my winner a couple of months ago, I actually had Damian Priest, but I think that should
so
be failed.
That's
I think why
that, I'm
that,
you
yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. I thought he was the one who was being groomed for that because I was seeing him on the exact same trajectory as Bobby Lashley. That's who I thought. But I at this point, that ship has sailed, and I would need to think harder on that. It's not going to be Kevin Owens. I can pretty much guarantee you that. But maybe a surprise Rock if you're going to be Rock at WrestleMania. Cause I mean, I had heard rumors that they might do Rock and Reigns at, Royal Rumble. I could see him be, you know, like a surprise entrance or whoever his opponent is, Lesnar. On the roster, Drew. Yeah, I mean, right now those are the only ones I got. Or if they want to do something with one of the guys that they have, like, you know, Bron Breakker or I don't know. I haven't been watching NXT, so one of the guys that they're hot on. And I've heard Bron Breakker's name dropped a lot of times, so maybe something like that.
Yeah,
I don't think Vince McMahon is going to be too patient. He's going to want to get somebody up quick.
Interesting. I didn't expect those from you, so.
Did you have something else, Javier?
I'll get back to you with when I have time to actually think about it more thoroughly. But yeah, I mean, Damian Priest was my first pick, and it's like it's gone. By the way,
I remembered that you had said that, and I remember agreeing with you listening to something, and I'm like, you know what? I bet his mind's changed because mine has.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. My three, just to come full circle here.
Oh yeah.
Are Brock.
Mm-hmm.
Potentially Bobby Lashley to move over to SmackDown and challenge Reigns. And then my last one, to really come full circle on everything we talked about tonight, is Big E.
Hmm. If as champion or having lost it to Belt first?
Having lost it first, which why I keep going back to, I think there's a chance that he drops it to Seth and then turns around and wins the Rumble.
And then chooses to face Roman after beating Roman on Sunday?
He's not beating Roman on Sunday, but that might be your rematch, yeah. That's very, very possible.
Yeah, because as a matter of fact, what you mentioned about Drew, that's actually what I thought was going to happen when Drew lost last Survivor Series. I'm like, I'm not worried about it.
Yep.
You know, yeah, they are – they are signposting that Drew's the number two guy behind Reigns with the idea that Drew is going to, you know, eventually go over to SmackDown and beat Reigns. That, you know, so I thought Drew was going to be the one who beats Reigns and to become the guy. And now again, I don't know.
I think they might run that back.
Yeah. Well, Javier and Alex, I need something to talk about. For you know, starting in mid-December, so I'm gonna opt out for now, and I'm gonna also cheat and wait to see what happens on Sunday, and what happens December 11th when Brock Lesnar buys a ticket in the front row, and I get a sense of how big this New Year show is gonna be for them. I'm gonna wait it out for a variety of reasons, but it's fun to listen. It's fun to listen.
Are they running it again?
Not that anyone asked.
No, it's just for some reason I just looked up on my TV and are they running replays of SmackDown now after the show?
On FS1 or Fox?
No, I have it on Fox, I think. Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea. Just ignore that because it's just weird because it's on my TV and it says live and I'm like, it's not live and I don't have it playing. Yeah. I don't know. Just Comcast is weird.
Not in Fort Myers.
Oh, man. All right, so I think that's pretty much all I had. So it's gone on long today. So.
Awesome.
All right. So hopefully talk to you soon. Oh, and be on the lookout for the primer, the SmackDown primer. Oh, my God. I'm so tired. Survivor Series primer. Hopefully have that finished by tomorrow. So,
great. So check that out on – yep. Excellent, Javier. Check that out on pwtorch.com. Alex, thank you so much. We went longer than I thought we would for this show, but it is, you know, the eve of – well, we're in the East Coast. We're on the eve of Survivor Series. So it is a pay-per-view weekend. So I'm glad we got some talk larger than just SmackDown proper to get us primed for Sunday. Always great talking to you. It's been a while since we did a show together, and it is always great getting your opinion and having you in that chair.
Thank you.
You were very muffled there. I will not accept that.
I said I appreciate it, Wade.
You're welcome. Take care. Have a great weekend.
You too, man. Thanks. Bye.
Yep, you bet. Thanks, everybody. Take care.